The good thing is that I'm allowed to get excited about constant factor improvement of things. So that's pretty good, which is what this talk is all about. So, but the good thing about being the last one to give a talk is that everybody already knows everything about fault tolerance, the threshold, and some details about different codes. So I'm gonna go like pretty fast over this part and go directly to the implementation of the things that we look at in more detail. So let me just remind you that you can do, with fault tolerant design, you can do arbitrary long quantum computation, and the key elements that you use is quantum error correcting codes and concatenation. So you know, we know that the threshold theorem result says that if the physical error is below a certain threshold, the logical error is strongly suppressed. And this is the formula, so it's a double exponential suppression when you have k levels of concatenation. So one of the questions that we looked at is the idea of, okay, you can do this arbitrarily long quantum computation, but you want to know, okay, how fast can I do it? And fast in terms not of the hardware, how fast the hardware is, but how fast can you do it in terms of discrete time steps by applying your computation. So we know that concatenation will reduce the error rate, but the price that we pay it's in space latency. So we have this recursive construction, so we know that things will need more qubits and more time. And the problem is that this construction, the structure of concatenated codes, yields an exponential growth in the resource that we use. It's not that bad, because you don't want the infinite number of concatenation levels, so you're going to go up to a certain point. But after that number of levels, the scaling is exponential. So in general, we know that we're going to have an overhead in terms of space and time, and it will depend on the details of the implementation, so particularly what quantum code you're using and what type of constraints you have in terms of locality, dimensionality, and so on. So the point is, so this is kind of, again, part of the review. So if you have a zero level gate, you know that the first level of encoding, what you're going to do fault tolerant on the computing, is to have the encoded gate. And you're going to apply error correction to the encoded codes before and after each encoded operation. And when you go to the k level of concatenation, you have this recursive type of construction. And the point that I want to stress here is that, so we're looking at how long it will take to do this computation. So error correction is what you're doing at every time step, basically. So you do your encoded gate, you do error correction, you do another encoded gate, error correction. So if you have that, the latency of error correction in terms, let's say, of the number of time steps it takes to run, is LEC after k levels, the latency of your whole computation is at least LEC to the k power. So you're going to have, actually, it's going to be longer because you have your encoded gates, but at least you have to do error correction at all levels and after each time step. So the point is to look at efficient error correction so that we can reduce this lattice, and that's subject to the constraint that we're putting of locality and two-dimensional setup. So let me give you a basic idea of how we thought about latency in error correction. So the basic form in error correction that you have, like reduced to its bare minimums, will be you prepare some ancilla qubits, you interact these ancilla qubits with the beta qubits, and you measure the ancilla. That like very ideal and abstract way will take at least three time steps to do something like that. But typically what you have is that you need the ancilla preparation, you're going to need at least two or more time steps. Two because you prepare something in a product state, but you want to entangle to use the ancilla, so at least you need time steps for that. And if you need verification, you need more time steps to have a good ancilla. And the interaction with data cubes may require more than one time step, for example, in the CSS codes. you want to correct for C and observes, and you interact with the detective once for the observes and another time for the seers. So basically, the error correction latency is at least 3, but more likely at least 5 or more. So the way we ended up doing this scheme was using the 9-qubit Bacon shortcode. And I'm going to go fast because, I mean, John Preskill already talked about this code yesterday. But basically, the key points is that you arrange your qubits in a square, and the state of the qubit is encoded in a subsystem of the subspace that is stabilized by these operators. That these operators are just x operators in two of the rows, like first on the first and second, and then on the second and third. And the other operators are z operators on first and second column and the second and third column. Your logical operators, the z is just z operators on the first column and the x operator on the first row. This code protects against arbitrary one-qubit errors. And one nice feature is that because of the subsystem encoding, you have that some two-qubit errors will act trivially on your encoded information. So it's easy. I mean, some of the errors are going to cancel out if they happen. So how you do the error correction in this one? So we were very fortunate to, we were looking at this problem to find this paper by Panos Alferis and Andrew Cross. Well, they look at precisely this code and fault-tolerant error correction schemes for this code. And basically, the important part is that the ancilla state, when you do the 9-qubit code, does not require verification. So there are very simple circuits that you can run to extract the syndrome. And this basically is a figure stolen from the paper. And what you're doing here is, this is part of the, if you want, the encoded states that you use for extracting the syndromes. And you're running the same type of circuit in parallel for all three columns to extract the Z errors, and this type of circuit in parallel for all three rows to extract the X errors. So when you look at this error correction scheme, and you look at the latency, how long it takes six times that. So you need 3 to prepare the ancilla, then you need 1 to interact with the data, you need 1 to measure, but you also need to have basically time when you interact this part with the data and when you interact this part with the data. So because it's a CSS code, you're doing it, you have to do it in different time steps. So now we were looking at the local 2D architecture. So previous work on this is a paper by Gori, DiVincenzo, and Verhal, that they studied the 7-qubit scheme code. And they embedded these qubits in a 6x8 array, and where the extra qubits are used for ancilla preparation, measurement, transport, and so on. And it's the same thing that we're going to do. And in that setting, the error correction requires 27 time steps. With the 9-qubit code, what we did is basically follow the same kind of idea. So we embedded the 9 qubits in a 7x7 array. So at this point, we're going from 48 to 49 qubits. So we are only adding a little bit in terms of space, resource usage. And again, we're going to have the same, we're going to use the same principles of dummy qubits that you use to prepare ancillas and measure ancillas and move data qubits around. And the nice thing is that combining using this code in this type of setting, we can run the error correction in 7 time steps. So remember that for the 9-qubit code, that the error correction scheme given by Alferis and Cross, the completely abstract implementation takes 6 time steps. So we are only with 1 more. We can do it in a local and 2D architecture. And basically, this is the result of what the encoded gates, the number of times that you take the CNOT, you can do it in 9 times. That this is the encoded part. It's not the one rec, doesn't include error correction or anything. the swap 7 time steps, the Hadamard 5 time steps, and the preparation take 9 time steps. So, okay, we're gonna, this is the same type of diagram. I hope that everybody's familiar with this, Sword and Jones under Hall used to show how the error correction sequence goes, and I purposely use the same kind of thing because, I mean, it's very easy to see what's going on, and so that everybody will understand, because probably you've already seen this before. So here we start. So we have our 7x7 qubit array. We put the data qubits in this position, so you still have this kind of 3x3, so the red are the data qubits. They're in a square array. And we're going to use these dummy qubits either for like transport channels or preparing and see. So this is the first time step, of the error correction, what we're doing here. So this, for example, is the ancilla number 1, and it's being prepared in the Z eigenstates, or in the zero state. And here is the ancilla number 2 being prepared in the Seneca state of the X operator. Then the other types of operation that we're going to use, we're going to have swap gates represented by this double arrow and C not gate, and then the measurements. So let's look at the sequence. We're not going to consider leakage errors, but that's what they look like. And so let's go for the first time step. So at the beginning, what we need to do, we prepare some qubits for the ancilla, so we need to start entangling them to do the operation. So the next time step, as you see, these two that were prepared, these are part of the ancilla. So green is now ancilla qubits are being, you apply a signal between the two of them. And here you start to prepare another qubit for the ancilla. So one thing that I should say before is that basically we need to prepare this 3 qubit CAT states and rotated CAT, Hadamard rotated CAT states, one for each column and one for each row. And we're going to do it in this line, in the external lines of dummy qubits, we're going to do that for the external 2 columns and the external 2 rows. But then we need to take some time to do it for the middle column and the middle row. So basically, that's where the problem, well, not the problem, but you have to be careful, and that gives you the extra time step that you need to do all this. But the ones here, you can do no problem, and then the idea would be to move it to be together with the data qubits and make it interact. So let me do this relatively fast. So now all the ancillas are finishing being prepared, so we have all the interactions. Here is the finishing preparing this ancilla. This ancilla was applied a C node with this one before, so now it's moving close to the D7. Here's another ancilla moving, and so on, and things like that. At this point, we start interacting with the data qubits here and here. This one interacted on the first on the first time step, so we already can measure this one. And we have other interactions here. So now it starts basically most of the interactions. So we did most of the interaction. Now in this time step, we can start doing a lot of measurements. We still have some qubits interacting, and this one is still moving to get together with this data qubit. So this one, this is the problem that 2D presents you. There's one that you have to move longer than the other ones. And so finally, we measure some more. This one finally gets together with D2, interacts. The next time step we measure, and we're done with error correction. So, okay, yeah, okay. So how do you do encoded operations? Well, the encoded C node, it's clear what it's going to be. So it's basically the same principle as in the sort of in the Jones Sutter Hall paper. So we're going to move the qubits together, make the C node, and it's a transverse operation, and take them back. The one difference that we have is that we're interested in doing this as fast as possible. So instead of moving one qubit to the other, make it interact and take it back, we're going to move them together, interact in the middle, and go back. So that's all. So let's go fast. So this one's moved up, so there's room for the other one to come in, and they start moving, they drag, and they go back. And it takes nine steps to do that. So what about universality and threshold with this setup? So for universality, you need extra single qubit gates. And the idea, I mean, this part is we haven't thought about implementing this in a 2D local thing. So this, I'm just referring to Pan's thesis, where he looks at the problem of making this, using this encoding and making it universal. For example, using the noisy plus I state verification. You can also do the state injection at the algorithmic level. So our goal is try to look at this 2D local architecture and try to put bounds on, for example, if you want to factor a 1,000 digit number, what's the overhead in terms of time and space, trying to optimize the time. And so the gates that you're going to need, like the phase gate, you can prepare these special states to apply to those gates, but you don't need them for the error correction. So they're only needed at the algorithmic level when you run your computation. And the threshold for the, these are the CSS gates, so the CNOT, Hadamard, swap, and so on, is turns out to be 1.83 10 to the minus 5. Again, taking the memory errors are 1/10 of gate errors. I was a bit disappointed about this number because it's lower, just below the 7 qubit threshold. And I was a little bit surprised because this implementation has less number of locations, so you expect that will be less number of malignant pairs, but maybe not. Maybe you're getting rid of superfluous locations, but you're still keeping all the malignant pairs, so in some sense. But it's pretty close, and what you're gaining, again, you're only adding one extra qubit in terms of space, and you're gaining this factor instead of latency. Because now, for a CNOT 1 rec, this is the number of times that it takes with this implementation, and this is the one with the 7 qubit flow. So you're gaining the factor 0.45 to the k for each level of concatenation that you do. So, okay, to summarize, error correction is some kind of the one of the most important bottlenecks for latency when you do concatenation, because you're doing it at every time step, every time that you do an encoded unit. And this latency is going to depend on the code chosen, and when you add to that the locality and dimensionality constraint, it's easy. I mean, it will be it's helpful to find codes which have a nice geometrical property, like the 9 qubit code that you have. The ancillas are very easy, and the ancillas for correction are very easy to build in that geometry. And in some sense, this 9 qubit Bacon shortcode turns out to be pretty optimal because we say that in general you expect error correction to take at least some 5 time steps. The abstract version of this error correction takes 6, and if you do it with locality and two-dimensional setup, you have 7 time steps. So it's pretty close to optimal in some sense. I mean, I'm not saying that there's nothing better. And then in general, the total latency of your computation is going to depend also on the number of computational levels. So maybe you can have codes with higher distance that the error correction will take longer, but maybe you need less levels of concatenation for whatever computation you want to do, and there might be a trade-off there that will be interesting to analyze, and that's something that we have for the future. And again, just reminding you that universality you can attain at the algorithmic level by doing state injection, and optimizing this part for this particular scheme with 2D and local, we just finished looking at this and then computing the threshold, so now we're going to start looking at that problem. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
So what is the Alcaraz cross threshold for the 9 qubit code?
10 to minus 4, 10 to minus 4.
So you're losing a lot compared to 7 qubit code, where you only lost a factor of like 2 or 3.
Now, the 7-qubit code, the threshold is 1.85 as 10 to the minus 7, with the same, 10 to the minus 5, sorry. And this is 1.83.
Yeah, I guess the point, my point was that the two-dimensional threshold that they have is much closer to the, you know, infinite-dimensional threshold than
the fact they're two different when they use the same one.
When they use the same model, that's right. Which is just a factor of 10 different even without the same model.
That's, yeah.
Or in fact, at least five.
So you use
but five with respect to the complete.
Yeah. So
you, oh, okay. You're comparing the abstract 7-qubit with the 2D 7-qubit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
So if you look at that ratio, it's much more to this little puzzle.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised. I was expecting a higher threshold because, again, the number of locations in.
That should be at least, I mean, I think what we've seen is that the thing is not so sensitive to the actual locations that you put in. So but you should at least not see a worse ratio. I mean, you should see something similar or better, you know.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, maybe there are some bugs to be found. I found some and it went up a little bit, but... but yeah, I was expecting something a little bit higher. Than that, but it seems I guess maybe in some sense you're reducing many of the locations. But if the malignant count kind of stays the same total number of malignant pairs.
Well, there is some difference in the sense that I think with the Allosteris, the way to make sure is less protective against noise on the ancilla, more direct. You know, we use the steam method, but with some, you know, some simplifications to make it fit in the cell.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's more. I don't know. I have to see where this comes from.
Have you looked at any additional optimizations with regards to the C knockage and using prepared entanglement? So I noticed, in particular, in your aircraft control tree, you have a lot of vacant spots.
Yeah, well,
you're waiting for the near the end of it. And if you're, for example, preparing EPR pairs on the edges between the two and starting to move them around.
But that's how the whole thing started. So we started looking at the 7-qubit 2D code and see, okay, can we improve the latency during the C knot by, instead of moving all the qubits, have some Bell states prepared and do that transport and then send them back. One thing is that you start needing more of these dummy qubits because you need to prepare those things. You can do it while you're doing error correction, but you have to prepare them, send them in this way, and then prepare them and send them back. And you have like 7 qubits that you have to send horizontally and vertically. So in particular, in the case of the 7-qubit code, they have this work area where they prepare the ancilla, but it's in the middle of the cell. So to move it horizontally, yeah, maybe you can get around to prepare it before during your error correction, prepare those Bell pairs and then do it. But if you want to go down, then you have to add a lot to the unit cell to be able to prepare those while you're still running error correction because it's in the middle. We look at that, and one, you need at least maybe like, it was like 10 by 12 kind of cells, so you're going higher in terms of the qubits that you need to use. And you didn't win that much because moving the qubits was like 7 time steps, but then you have like 3 or 4 times every time you prepare the Bell, then you have the teleportation, you have the Zeno, then you have to prepare some more Bell pairs to send them back.
Wait, why are you sending Bell pairs back?
I
believe that there's this overhead.
Because you could use a state that automatically gives you the C-naught, right? And prepare an entangled state of now 34 qubits, right? That are locally in the two blocks. And one of them is going to interact with the data. And at the end, what you get is in the other qubits, you have the C-naught applied to those. So it's the same type of KLM
instruction. But of course, you don't need to use that instruction. You can use a single Bell pair construction, too. So
but what do you mean by single depth? You have to do it locally, right? I mean, you have to prepare this long-distance bell curve locally.
So we can discuss that.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Like, yeah, maybe something there. Yeah, maybe something there, but we found that looking at the error correction proved to be more fruitful because we went from 27 times to almost optimal in 7 times because of these nice proper geometrical properties of this.
Yeah,
I think for long distance, it maybe is helpful that because then you can sort of prepare this EPR pair through a volume. You're not seeing the channel is ready when you want to move it. Mm-hmm.
It might still be helpful.
But locally, I don't see real advantages in.
Might still be helpful at the algorithmic level. Maybe once you've done that you.
Oh yes.
But here, you start getting a lot of extra space that you need. So.
Okay, so we have coffee and then the panel discussion.
Great. The panel discussion is going to be 5:15 in bistro.